Hello, this is Vivi on 90.8 FM Radio Campus Grenoble with English Talk Radio. My guest today is Jeremy Stubbs, President of the British Conservatives in Paris. We'll be talking about Brexit, the resignation of Prime Minister Theresa May, and what happens next. Hello, Jeremy. Welcome back to English Talk Radio.
Hello. Thank you very much, Vivi. It's good to be with you.
Now, I've started off by saying the end of May, and May is out, which isn't quite true because it's the 28th, but we're very close to June, and we're very close to the resignation of our Prime Minister. Whichever way you want to frame it, we are in June 2019 and still no end in sight to our national nightmare, as some people call it. What comes next, Jeremy?
Well, as you know, the order is that Theresa May will receive Donald Trump in the state visit to the UK next week. She will then officially resign on Friday the 7th and remain as a kind of caretaker while there is a hastily organized leadership competition to see who will be the next, really, not only head of the Conservative Party, but the next Prime Minister of the UK.
Now, let's just go stop there and say that to our listeners, that the head of the Conservative Party is the next Prime Minister. But why so? Why isn't there a general-wide election at this point with the resignation of any Prime Minister?
Because the system in Britain doesn't elect a Prime Minister. It elects a majority, hopefully when there is one, in the House of Commons, and that majority then says who will be its boss, so to speak. And as the Conservatives with the DUP have that majority, then by tradition, whoever is the head of the Conservatives becomes Prime Minister.
Right. Well, of course, I did know that, actually, but I wanted you to say it out loud.
Indeed, I know. For the listeners. Worth saying, because it's not the same as in France.
Exactly. That's why we needed to have it said. Of course, Prime Minister May will resign. However, she'll be in power for the visit of the US President Trump. In fact, until the end of July, because it's usually a six-week process, isn't it?
That's right. Probably will be over and done with by the middle of July. But
no.
As there are daily more and more candidates putting themselves forward, it might take longer.
Yes, indeed. They're like the Democrats in the US. I think they're up to 22 now. We're getting very close to that. Tell our listeners how the process might work.
Well, it's a very specific process in two phases. In the first phase, the candidates are voted upon by their fellow Conservative MPs, and that is done in two rounds. So after two rounds of voting, each round reduces the number of remaining candidates. After those two rounds of voting, there will be two left over, the two top candidates. And those candidates will then be offered to the members of the party in a final vote. And the members of the party will choose which one of the two becomes leader.
So Mrs. May informed Her Majesty the Queen that she would announce her resignation, I understand. She telephoned her. Is that correct? But she hasn't actually gone to the palace. She just advised the Queen.
I think going to the palace formally is what will happen on the 7th.
Exactly, yeah. But she had to advise the Queen. She couldn't just do it without telling Her Majesty.
Well, you don't just turn up on the Queen and say what's in your mind.
I don't know. I think she seems like a pretty forthright person.
She is, but I wouldn't... I wouldn't take too many liberties with her.
Indeed not. It seems to me that none of this will affect the Brexit situation at all. Didn't Donald Tusk mention that in a most polite way?
Well, on the European side, people are of course saying that the deal remains the same, the deal on offer. And they've said that ever since last December. And it's a negotiating position to say that nothing has changed and we're not going to change anything. When it, as the expression goes, when push comes to shove, it might well be different. Because one thing is for certain, and that is that the current deal on offer is not being accepted by Parliament.
Absolutely.
And even if there were general elections and you changed the personnel to some degree, the likelihood is it still wouldn't be accepted.
Mm-hmm. Now, losing British Steel is a big problem for the British economy and right now being blamed on the lack of progress in the Brexit gala. No confidence vote.
Well, the things like that are no doubt related more or less to the uncertainty over Brexit, although there are, of course, other factors there. But this is just another incitement for some, at least, to get on and, as they say in that wonderful expression, deliver Brexit as though it were a letter stuck in the post office.
Or a baby, indeed.
Indeed, yes. So, in a way, if we talk of confidence, all of the candidates for the Conservative leadership at the moment are talking rather glibly of restoring trust. And doing so by delivering Brexit, although no one is very specific as to how they will do that yet.
Well, of course, they can't be. They don't know. I mean, had it been possible, it would have been done, I would assume.
I think there's a lot of truth in what you've said Vivi. What is the case, though, is that the elections to the European Parliament last week and this week, in which Mr. Farage and his Brexit party have done so well, and it is a remarkable achievement in its own way, given the sudden creation of this party, this is putting huge pressure on the Conservative government in office to consider whatever might be meant by a no-deal Brexit. And when I said that, dramatic music would suddenly have played.
Well, I did sigh. That's the best I could do.
Very well done, Vivi. Right on cue.
All right. You mentioned the European elections. Let's jump right into that. European election results. What do we have there? Has that made any difference to us, to our situation in the UK?
Well, everybody's arguing over this. There are people who are arguing about whether the vote for the Brexit party was greater or lesser than the combined votes for the Lib Dems and the Greens, these two parties, one supposes representing votes to remain. All of these arguments, though, are very inconclusive and really just tend to suggest that there is, as before, a very, very thin line between leave and remain. If it really moved dramatically one way or the other, we would have a better idea of what we could do. On the other hand, I think it's fair to say that the success of Farage's party as a single party represents what I think is there's a lot of voter anger out there about Brexit and about the referendum. And, all right, you may say, well, there are lots of people angry about lots of things, but this is very vocal voter anger. And I have to say that it's the kind of anger that is expressed as well by members of the Conservative Party, the Conservative Party who are in power and who are about to elect a new leader. So that is a very, very pertinent factor in those elections. The other thing from the European side of the elections is that there were some who said that there would be a huge breakthrough by populists and nationalists, people like Salvini in Italy, Marine Le Pen in France, Mr. Orban, and so on. But there, they've had success, but it's rather less than would have been estimated by some, meaning that the the sort of the center, central left, central right parties are really still in control of the European Parliament.
At this time.
Yes, well, when the new MPs, MEPs take their place, they will still be in the majority. Mm. Although, whereas the EPP and the S&D used to collaborate together, they're going to have to accept the so-called liberals under Mr. Verhofstadt in the middle into their majority. And there'll be an interesting race to see who is appointed to the Commission and especially to its president. That is what's going on now. But the relevance for the UK is that some people might have thought that with more populists in the European Parliament, the European Union might have been led to be, shall we say, more indulgent towards Brexit. Mm-hmm. That doesn't look like being the case.
Mm. I agree with you on that. Now, two questions, very short answers, please. Will there be a bounce off after Mrs. May resigns? If so, what kind of a bounce?
Well, there will be some kind of a bounce, but it will depend upon whether the new leader elected is overtly Brexit, in which case there'll be a big bounce in the Brexit opinion, or somebody who is, shall we say, a former Remainer, in which case there could be a few ripples on various sides. Mm. But if you like, it's the... As again, it's the Farage factor, the Farage factor that is sweeping many conservatives towards that possibly hard Brexit approach. And, you know, it's very difficult to see what is going to happen. We're in complete uncertainty as to who will be elected leader.
On to the next British Prime Minister. The queue looks rather similar to those shots of Everest we saw last week. Too many people assuring the public that they have been begged to run and that the country can't possibly do without them. And I would go back a couple of sentences or questions to what you said about anger. I'm very, very, very strongly of the same opinion. There's a lot of anger out there, and not just in the UK, in France as well. With UK citizens. And I think those people, those candidates who are rushing towards the door of number 10, shall we say, should take that as a warning. I'm sure they all listen to English talk radio. So I do warn you to be paying attention to that, because I think that's quite a bit more serious. I don't think Mrs. May took that too seriously.
Well, your analogy with Everest is, I think, an excellent one. I like that very much. That is the situation. people are, as always in this race, they are trying to talk to those sections of the electorate that they think will listen to them the most.
Yeah.
And I don't think there has been or will be a candidate who speaks very, very particularly to Britons living abroad, especially as most of us at the moment are either no longer able to vote or, as in my case, in the last year of voting.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing I've heard in our favour is that Michael Gove has promised to give British citizenship to European citizens in the UK, and one might sort of extrapolate and hope that kind of favourable treatment will be reciprocated to those of us who live in Europe. You never know.
Well,
that's
like
the only thing I've heard recently.
I'd like to address that, because when I saw that in the paper, I was quite startled and I started to smile. It's on the front page of the Times, Sunday Times, which, of course, I didn't get till Monday because I live in France, in Grenoble. But I was very amused by that, because I thought, wow, you know, he's giving out sweets, isn't he? I mean, I'll give you some sweets if you vote for me. I mean, he can't say that. It's not possible for him to be able to say that. There's an awful lot of things that have to happen before that could.
Well, he's if you like, making an offer, giving an indication of things he might do. And it has to be said that he's one of the few who's indicating anything at all. You see, that is an offer that was initially made by the British government at the start of the Brexit negotiations.
Long time ago.
And was swept aside by the Europeans, saying, let's wait and see. But I think you're right. He's setting out his stall, first of all, for British voters.
And we all get smarties, and then the smarties will switch over here and we'll all become French citizens. And is that what you're saying?
I think the smarties will melt in our pockets, and when we put our hand in there, it'll just be a sticky mess.
Yes, that's what I'm afraid of too, and I don't want to clean that up. What about the second referendum? What are the chances?
Well, this is the other big consequence, really, of the drubbing received by the Conservatives and Labour in the European elections. Labour is coming out more and more clearly as a second referendum party, although we don't know exactly. People talk of a confirmatory referendum, but one never knows as to whether the option to remain will not be slipped onto the ballot paper. Mm-hmm. These things remain unclear. What's for sure is that more than ever, people in favour of Brexit are opposed to any idea of a second referendum. So, as you were saying earlier on, really nothing has changed. We're as divided as ever and as much in uncertainty as ever.
Which brings me to my next question, Jeremy. General election.
Well, here again, after the tremendous success of Nigel Farage's party and his subsequent threat to prepare candidates in all UK constituencies for a general election, the Conservatives and Labour are both running scared.
Yep.
They're running scared of the idea of a general election. The Conservatives, it has to be said, are more scared than Labour. But I think Labour are conscious that they've somehow got to put their house in order and come up with a coherent set of policies.
Do you think that's possible?
Often failure focuses the mind, maybe even Jeremy Corbyn's mind.
Which is my next question. Mr. Corbyn, in pole position.
Well, a lot of people are saying, given his success in the 2017 elections, which was, he did better than people expected him to do.
Astonishing, I think,
Given that any vote for the Brexit Party is likely to hit the Conservatives more than Labour, this would open the door to the door of number 10, as you said before, to Mr. Corbyn. This is what, of course, within the Conservative Party, we always threaten unruly elements. Do you want this or do you want Mr. Corbyn? I have a feeling, though, that people are getting so gung-ho that they're no longer frightened of that possibility, which means that it's actually becoming more real day by day.
More comfortable, Mr. Farage has ordered a new suit, I hear. What does that tell us?
I mean, I don't wish to be mean, but who's paying for it?
there's such a choice there.
Well, indeed. No, that was a rather below-the-belt remark, although maybe he wears braces from me. I'm simply referring, of course, to the investigation into the funding he received from Arron Banks, which he didn't declare as an MEP. What's for sure is that at the moment, all sorts of negative accusations just run off him like water off a duck's back.
I agree with you.
Whatever that suit is, it's going to be a fancy suit, I would reckon.
Well, he does wear rather extravagant clothes anyway, so I'm imagining something really fantastic. I heard that Mary Quant is coming out of retirement to help him out.
Well, I would be interested to see if it incorporates a miniskirt.
No. We won't let him do that. New Conservative Party leader. Ooh, place your bets. I mentioned in our previous talks a Mr. Hunt, and I still rather fancy Mr. Hunt for it, but he's lost a bit of his luster, and I also had my eye on Penny Mordaunt, but she doesn't come anywhere. Nobody's interested in her at all. So tell us, place your bets. Tell us, who is it going to be? Who do you fancy?
Well, there's the person one thinks is likely and the person one would prefer to think was likely to win. Of course, the big favourite is Boris Johnson.
Of course.
His only obstacle, though, is in that two-phase process of the election mechanism. He is not well trusted by his fellow MPs, so he might not wind up in the final two who are offered to the electorate. If he does, though, it is very likely that he will be the next prime minister, as long as he can get through that first phase. Kenneth Clark recently reminded us that in previous leadership elections, the favourite never finished as the winner. So it might not be Boris Johnson, according to that past form. The next most likely people... Well, it could be Jeremy Hunt, because he is a rather, in a way, he comes across today as a rather colourless, odourless sort of compromise person. And he would have to acquire a bit of flavour, I think, during the hustings to really stand out.
You think he's being a little bit too careful?
Quite possibly, although... You know, there have been a few slips, which I think you were evoking recently, that unfortunate comparison with Nazis, I think it was. That didn't look very diplomatic for a foreign secretary.
Right. He also was very confused about the nationality of his wife, I think, at some point.
Well, I can understand that. I'm often confused myself, you know, but there you are.
Not very flattering for the wife, though. No, but I think that that there's a different idea now. I've heard several people say, not a woman, which made me furious, but it also made me furious when Prime Minister May started crying, because I didn't like that either. You know, women, men, does it matter? Gove, I mean, we always think of Gove as the man who had the dagger in his hand. He was Brutus, and...
Yes, exactly.
People forget that? I haven't forgotten it. I don't think people were going to forget that. And also, do we forget that Boris Johnson was foreign secretary and he was sacked?
Well, he resigned, but he he was a lot worse in the mistakes he made, really, than Jeremy Hunt. What he said about the poor, unfortunate woman detained in Iran was a major mistake. But of course, rather like Nigel Farage, a Brexiteer, negative things just seem to run off them, it has to be said. Michael Gove, I think, you know, is probably the most intelligent and pragmatic of all these people. But as you say, that idea that he stabbed Johnson in the back is still very widespread amongst conservative members. And yet, he only really went for it because Johnson was dithering so much. And Johnson, it has to be said, has a record of dithering.
Well, we've already had a dithering prime minister. I don't think we need another one of those. We're running out of time. We've got 3 minutes left, so I'm going to say we have seen many articles in the media that Mrs. May was the worst prime minister in many years. Didn't she have a most daunting task? Would anyone have been able to bring Brexit to a close?
Well, I think you're right. It was a very daunting task. She was not even elected, but designated because the opposing candidate withdrew. So I think that made her even more insecure in her position, leading to that unfortunate election in 2017. I also would say that the mistakes she made in her negotiation strategy, they began from day one. And on day one and thereafter for quite a while, lots of people were cheering her on in what she was doing. So her mistakes were not hers alone. The people who criticize her now, they took a very long time, and they only really criticized her when it was too late. The failure, I have to admit, the failure is really a collective one.
Yes, but she had the title, and when you have the title, Jeremy, you have to take responsibility. So I'm going to ask, did Prime Minister May have to go? And my answer to that is yes, and she should have gone sooner.
Yes, you're almost certainly right, although who knows, again, what on earth is going to happen and whether it will be any different from the case in which she had gone sooner.
We live in interesting times. Jeremy, some information about your association, please.
Well, we are British Conservatives in Paris. You can find us, our website, under that, under BCIP. You'll find us very easily. We're on Facebook as well. We're part of Conservatives Abroad. There are other associations. There's an association in the southwest of France as well for people who live there. And, of course, we're gearing up to take part in the elections to the leadership of our party and the prime ministership.
We live in very interesting times.
We do.
Thanks to Jeremy Stas, President of the British Conservatives in Paris. Thank you so much, Jeremy.
Thank you, and thank you to all your listeners.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
You can listen to English Talk Radio Wednesday, 1900, Sunday, 12:30, and on 90.8 FM, Radio Campus Grenoble. Don't forget the podcast, www.campusgrenoble.org, and thanks to our techie supreme, Chris. English Talk Radio.